Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Okay, we've got a half hour left in this version of Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. You can learn more about the organization that I work for, and that's the Center for Individual Freedom, by visiting our website at www.cfif.org, where you can sign up for our free Lunchtime Liberty update that shows up every Friday in your mailbox. You can also click on the audio version of the interviews that we host here on WEBY 1330 AM. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, I encourage you to do so by dialing 623-1330. The current topic of discussion is going to be legal reform, tort reform, as some folks refer to it. And joining me on the line from Colorado is one of Colorado's super lawyers. He's also been known as Colorado Civil Justice League's Lawyer of the Year in 2005. Please welcome Lee Meekus. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. You there? Actually, there you are. Okay, you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. Got to push a button to get you on. Okay,
no
he's
problem.
A graduate of the University of Virginia School of Law and Williams College, and you also attended Oxford for some time. Well, congratulations to you. No, that's fantastic. I've got a friend who's headed over there not too long from now. I know, very much looking forward to the experience. Let's talk about tort law. Some people refer to it as product liability law. What's a tort? Start there.
A tort, by and large, is just a negligence action. It's usually a suit to recover money damages because someone got hurt or killed in some sort of an accident, and the person who got hurt says, you did this to me, and you ought to pay me for it.
Legitimate or not legitimate?
Well, every case is going to be different. And any time that there is a dispute over who's responsible for an injury, both sides have an axe to grind. And a lot of these cases can be legitimate. On the other hand, a lot of times, tort cases are used as a litigation lottery tool for contingency fee lawyers and for folks who really aren't injured all that bad, or sometimes not even at all, to play the lottery, roll the dice, and see if they can get lucky at the expense of some insurance company or some big manufacturer or doctor or some other deep pocket.
Okay, so when we talk about legal reform, when we talk about tort reform, are we talking about doing away with people's right to sue? I mean, obviously, you know, as someone that's going to go into court, hold up your right hand and agree to what's said in the Constitution. I can't imagine that there's any lawyer out there who's going to say, you know, someone should not be given, or we should take away someone's right to sue. That's not what we're talking about.
Of course not. Of course not. What we're talking about is putting some reasonable limitations on recoveries, inserting some common sense rules back into the litigation circumstance that has, in many instances, just gone totally out of control.
Well, why have we gone out of control? I mean, what do you think it is? I mean, I know that, you know, you hear talk about, you know, people are sue happy. There are a lot of people, and I know I have this beef, and it goes even beyond just, you know, people suing other people, but in you know, just everyday life, personal accountability. You know, everybody wants to point the finger at somebody else, and it's never anyone's fault. How do we get to where we are, Lee?
It's been a long time coming, Renee. It really has been. And I'm sure it's a series of small steps that have taken place over decades. But because of the incentives that get built into the system, where, unlike Europe, for instance, where the loser doesn't have to pay the other side's attorney's fees, for someone who hires a contingency fee lawyer, there's almost no risk at all in going to a lawsuit and seeing how things come out. There are also a series of rules that have been put in place by the courts in most jurisdictions, although some of that is changing a little bit as reform goes down the road, where even if I'm 10% responsible and somebody else, a drunk driver, for instance, is 90% responsible, something called joint and several liability may mean that I'm on the hook for 100% of the damages, even though the jury has said I only caused 10% of the fault. Like I say, the rules are different in every jurisdiction, and in some places that's changing, but that was the rule for a long, long time.
Right. Yeah,
that puts a big incentive on folks to roll the dice and see what happens when the jury comes back.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was on closing day of our legislative session here, which we have a very short legislative session in the state of Florida. But in Florida last year, that was a huge victory for legal reform when they, in fact, did away with joint and several liability, exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, what about class action lawsuits? Maybe it's just because, you know, and with my our previous guest, we talked about this with the increase in technology. You know, people just are able to hear and learn about a lot more that we weren't able to and hear about even 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Is it simply technology, or is it, in fact, factually accurate that there just seem to be so many class action lawsuits? Why?
Well, I can't say that there are any statistics that I know of that says now we've got a lot more than we used to have, but I certainly agree that it sure seems like we've got a lot more, and I suspect that those statistics would bear us out when we say that. Again, we've got an incentive system built into the way America conducts litigation where lawyers out there who don't have anything better to pursue have this opportunity in the class action structures to chase down, you know, small losses, and by that I mean sometimes pennies per individual. And for the individual, they don't care, but when we add up hundreds of thousands or even millions of potentially affected consumers, that can, and we take a third or 40% for the lawyers, that can add up to huge money for the lawyers, but not really anything meaningful for the consumers that supposedly were injured.
Yeah, in fact, I just read earlier today that in a class action lawsuit that involved Fen-Phen, remember that diet drug that I can't even remember who the manufacturer of it was, but there was several class action lawsuits involving Fen-Phen and, you know, people who later had heart problems. And I think I just read earlier today, and my numbers may be a little bit off, but the ratios are pretty close, that in that case they're looking at, there's actually a grand jury has been called to look at whether or not there will be criminal charges brought against the lawyers who brought on that case. And there's also been some talk of some civil actions because in that case was ultimately, or this case that they were talking about was ultimately settled. But in that situation, apparently the plaintiffs had an agreement with the plaintiff's lawyers that the plaintiff's lawyers would get roughly between 30% and 33% of any settlement. Well, as the facts came out you know, there were confidentiality agreements. And in fact, when plaintiffs showed up to get their check, they were told, you can't even discuss this with a family member. You should not discuss it with a family member. Well, now what's coming out is that the plaintiffs ended up with like $74 million and the lawyers ended up with like $106 million. That doesn't sound like 30 to 33%. I mean, I'm not good at math and I will readily admit that, but I think I can tell you that $106 million is not 30 to 33% of $74
million. Well, and that's part of the difficulty that comes with negotiating settlements on these class actions. A lot of times, the supposedly injured parties won't really recover anything. They'll get a coupon,
right,
or they'll get some sort of a change in service from whoever the defendant is. The only cash that gets changed, that changes hands, is actually payment by the company to the lawyers. And on some levels, it just seems fundamentally wrong to me.
Well, in this case, and I wish I had brought the facts of this case, but what made it further interesting to me was, as a part of the settlement, there was a nonprofit organization that was set up, a charity was set up that was going to, you know, I guess, oversee the settlements and the Fen-Phen, and you would not believe who was going to serve and received, I think, $5,000 a month for serving on that charity. No one other than the judge who heard the case and had since retired.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, that boy, if that doesn't stink. But, you know, again, I think it, you know, not all cases, certainly as you've pointed out, not all cases are frivolous. Not all cases, you know, should be tossed out on their ear. But there are, you know, I think a fair number of those where there may be, you got to question what is going on, what's going on, you know, in the heads of the individuals who file the cases and the plaintiffs who allow them to move forward. And really where I start as well questioning is the judges that don't look at this case and say, you know, get out of here. Don't waste my time. The wheels of justice turn slowly enough without you being here as well.
Well, it sure seems that in the civil arena, there's room for improvement and room for maybe a little bit more skepticism on the part of the folks who sit on the bench. And I would sure love to see a little bit more of a skeptical eye turned and an eye turned toward throwing suits out earlier. Every time I'm a lawyer, and I love to represent my clients, and God bless them. But I also have to recognize that every time I pick up the phone or start typing on a new legal document, that's going to cost my client real money. And the longer a case goes on, the more it's going to cost my client. And while it would be in my personal interest for every case to go all the way down the road, to go all the way to trial, and even go on to appeal, I would much rather see some judges take put a jaundiced eye to some far-reaching, dubious-sounding lawsuits and say, you know what, I really don't think there's anything there, and we're not going to let you roll the dice on some case that is so far-reaching that it's going to do nothing but waste the defendant's money and waste the taxpayer's dollars in used up court time, used up jury time, things like that.
Are you familiar with a new study that's been put out by the Pacific Research Institute? It came out about 10 days ago or so.
I'm familiar with some of their work. I'm not sure if I'm familiar with
this is a
study.
Tort tax, and I'm setting this up for the listeners because in 2 weeks I'm going to be joined by Lawrence McQuillan, who is the co-author of this study. And they have actually quantified the direct and the indirect costs of these types of lawsuits, of the lack of legal reform in the United States. I mean, we talk about, and Paulson, our Secretary of Treasury, I think that's his title, you know, gave a speech not too long ago saying, you know, America is losing its competitiveness. We need to do something about it. And one of the things he clearly pointed to was the lack of legal reform here in the United States. And what this study points out, done by the Pacific Research Institute, is that there is, in fact, a quantifiable direct, indirect cost. And it gets down to a tort tax, and I think it averages out to about, believe it or not, $10,000 a year for a family of four.
That sounds about right. I know I've seen studies that, for instance, a baseball has a tort tax built into it of something like 35 cents for just a small product like that. It's not like these costs are something that insurance companies and manufacturers and doctors can simply write a check for and pretend that they never happened. Anyone, any business, is in business. And payouts come off the bottom line. That's got to be made up somewhere. And where it gets made up is in higher prices for all the consumers who buy those products or services. We get stuck with the bill.
Right. And you know, the report also indicates, you know, taking it one step further, and that is the lack of research and development. I mean, money that has to be spent on lawyers' fees to defend these cases, on lawyers' fees to craft the ridiculous language, you know, the very small print that you have to read with these liability forms and things. You know, that's money that's taken away from research and development.
Well, not just research and development being lost, but also good and useful products that are never introduced or, in fact, sometimes pulled off the market. There's a classic instance of that with a drug called Bendectin that was attacked by a number of lawsuits back in the late 80s, early 90s for allegedly causing birth defects. The drug was ultimately pulled off the market. At the time, it was the only effective anti-morning sickness pill available for pregnant mothers. But because of these lawsuits, which the science ultimately proved were absolutely and utterly meritless, but because of the pure lawsuits and the costs involved in defending them, the drug was pulled off the market, and for a period of time, mothers had no options at all.
I suspect the same thing is likely to happen with Vioxx. It happened with silicone breast implants, am I right?
Absolutely. And again, the science has unequivocally demonstrated that there is nothing to those claims.
Okay, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the science side of this, because very often these products that we're talking about, particularly the drugs, they have been regulated by a federal organization. Why is that not taken into account? We're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. Please stay tuned.
April 14th in Pensacola, Florida. Get ready for Grace Fest. Get into the spirit with top Christian artists like Newsboys, Salvador, Big Daddy Wee, Cutlass, and Stellar Card. Buy tickets now online at gracefest.org. Just $10 in advance or $15 at the gate. Go online or call about a special mission opportunity. Grace Fest is April 14th at the Pensacola Interstate Fairgrounds. And yes, on-site camping is available. Go online at gracefest.org. Call 850-47-GRACE.
Would you like a free map of Santa Rosa County? They're here, hot off the press by Mass Marketing, Inc. The new merchant map is a large, detailed map that folds easily to fit anywhere. The maps are sponsored by local merchants, and they're giving them away free. Pick up your free map in Santa Rosa County at WEBY 1330 AM Radio on Printer's Alley, Santa Rosa County Chamber on Stewart Street, Champion Rental Building Supply, Highway 90, First United Methodist Church of Pace, Chemukla Highway, All Pro Tune-Up, Highway 90. No gimmicks, no catches. The Handy Merchant Map is free. Get yours today while supplies last. You can also pick up your free map in Santa Rosa County at Ronnie Crispin, Inc., Highway 87 North, Grace Bible Church, Highway 89, Gunner's Gulf Coast Jewelers and Gifts, Woodbine Road, Milton Quality Bakery, Caroline Street, Cars Automotive Center, Glover Lane. These free maps are available to you courtesy of the sponsoring area merchants.
My great-grandparents came here from Italy, where they owned a hotel and restaurant in Bari on the eastern coast. They taught me about good food and good hospitality, and that's what I invite you to enjoy today. I'm Sergio Recanati of Recanati's Italian Restaurant on Avalon Boulevard in Milton. For generations, our family has found great pleasure in bringing together family and friends with authentic Italian food. Today, my family continues that tradition here. We invite you to come dine today at Recanati's Italian Restaurant on Avalon Boulevard, a mile and a half south of Highway 90. We promise you won't leave hungry.
The North American car of the year is the Saturn Aura. That's right, the Aura. And now through April 3rd at Saturn of Pensacola Spring Sales Event, you can get 0% financing and $1,000 cash back on the North American car of the year, the Saturn Aura. You get all of this plus Saturn's 100,000-mile warranty and the safety and security of OnStar, which comes standard. 0% financing, $1,000 cash back, OnStar, 100,000-mile warranty. Come check out the North American Car of the Year, the Saturn Aura, at Saturn of Pensacola, Highway 29, Car City.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We're talking with Lee Meekus. He's an attorney with Snell and Wilmer LLP out of Denver, Colorado. He also serves on the board for the Colorado Civil Justice League. He's on the Legal Advisory Board, and he's co-chairman of the Board of Directors there as well. And we've been talking about legal reform, tort reform by another name. And before we went to break, we were talking about some of the different regulatory drugs, the pharmaceuticals and medical devices and things that go through years and years and years of testing and ultimately try to get and win approval from the FDA or some other federal regulatory agency. And then, Lee, it seems that, you know, if something should go wrong, whether it's a bad outcome or just simply, you know, that someone has had a problem and there's a lawsuit that's filed, the fact that this federal agency has put its stamp of approval on the pharmaceutical item or the medical device seems to fall to the wayside. Doesn't sound fair to me.
And I think you're right. These drugs and even other kinds of products that are heavily regulated, like airplanes or boats or cars, go through long processes to comply with series of very detailed regulations. And yet, when we get to litigation, despite the fact that these products may have been examined for years by very skilled, highly knowledgeable folks within the agency whose job it is to protect the public and to ensure that the safety regulations are sufficient and that the product complies, it matters not a whit. In fact, companies can still be hit for punitive damages despite the fact that a product has been examined under the regulatory systems and given a clean bill of health.
Where do you go with this? I mean, where do we do it? It seems to me then that in some ways it lessens the validity then when you do have FDA approval, although obviously it can't be sold without it, many of these items. But,
right.
You know, I would like to think that if it's been approved by the FDA, I should feel comfortable as a consumer, as a mother, to be able to use this item, whether it's, you know, a pharmaceutical item or a medical device.
You should be able to. I think this is all about taking federal regulation seriously. If our federal agencies are living up to their legal duties, their legal obligations, then we should have confidence in those products that they are safe. They're safe to use. And if we don't have confidence, then somebody needs to talk to those regulators, and maybe we need to change the federal laws that relate to them, but they're not doing their jobs. But to have this two-tiered system where we've got specialist federal oversight, and then we still have tort recoveries where a jury can completely ignore the findings of those federal agencies and still whack a company for huge damages for producing that device that got the Clean Bill of Health, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
All right, let's talk some more about some of the other legal outrages that are structured into the law. And what comes to my mind is a case I remember out of Texas. And, in fact, we write about this on our website. It's a special that we put up written by an author out of Texas, a writer out of Texas. And he tells the story of a small-town situation where some gentlemen were involved in a rollover accident and bad outcome in the situation. But the car company was not allowed to bring in certain information that I would think a jury would need to know to make a fair decision. You know, this case didn't necessarily involve seatbelt rules, but I know there are plenty out there, you know, some states that say that, you know, if someone is injured and they're not wearing a seatbelt, that maybe that information can't be made available to the jury. Where's the fairness in something like that?
And the answer is there is no fairness. In virtually every state these days, it's a requirement under the traffic laws that people are supposed to wear their seatbelts. We all assume that people are going to obey the law. But yet if in some states, it used to be that way in Texas, just very recently changed, but a number of states, Montana and to some extent in my own state in Colorado, sometimes the jury can't even learn that information, that someone was not taking advantage of the number one piece of safety equipment in a vehicle, and they would have suffered minimal, if any, injury had they just chosen to do that.
That's comparative negligence, right? Is that what
we're
talking
about? Comparative
negligence,
exactly. And a number of states have structured their laws so that sometimes the evidence never comes out, or sometimes if the evidence does come out, it's strictly limited in the effect that it can have, and it can only reduce damages by some truly nominal number like 2% or 5%. That's just fundamentally wrong. That doesn't make any sense in a system that puts personal responsibility where the fault actually lies.
Okay, we have a call coming in. We've only got about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to go ahead and take it real quick. Go ahead, Ray, it's your turn.
Hey, I appreciate that. You know, we got a landfill company up here north of Milton up here that just come in here, and when I moved to my house, it was a clay pit where they got dirt out of. And now it's a C&D landfill, and they got a big, large Louisiana company pushing their weight around and doing what they want to and making our life a little bit less tolerable in that neighborhood. We got a high-populated area and a well-established neighborhood that's been there for back in the 50s. I can go back before we remember. And some of us have got some legal action going against them, but, you know, I mean, what do you do when you get a big company like this that's got all the, can keep you tied up in litigation for 20 years and got all the big guns, and they got the county commissioners that seem to be on their side because they don't seem to be, they act like their hands are tied. But, you know, if you get enough political pressure anywhere, I know you can make things happen. And I just wonder what are our recourse and what can we do against a big guy like this when all we got is to go find a lawyer to take it on contingency, because we don't have the kind of money to fight these kind of people.
Lee, do you want to comment on that?
Well, it's hard for me to comment on that particular circumstance. I obviously don't know anything about it. And certainly, if there's a wrong that's taking place, if this Louisiana company is acting negligently or improperly, then something should be done. And there's nothing wrong with taking a run at them in litigation. The question is, where do you draw the line and what kind of reasonable limitations can you put on any kind of litigation to make sure that
Lee,
cases
I'm sorry,
that have
we've,
some,
Lee,
some
we've,
merit go
Lee,
run the gamut, but that litigation
Lee, we've
lottery...
Close out.